Not every disability is as obvious as those that require someone to use a wheelchair or a cane. Conditions causing chronic pain, fatigue, or other problems can also profoundly affect how we live our lives, though it may not be apparent to a casual observer. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are going to talk with the founder of the Invisible Disabilities Association about how invisible disabilities affect so many and how we all can be more understanding. And we wonder if you have an invisible disability. Or maybe someone you know does. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. How does it affect your life? What do you wish more people understood about invisible disabilities or invisible illnesses? You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Wayne Connell, founder and president of the Invisible Disabilities Association, an organization that works to raise awareness of invisible disabilities and to offer resources to people who have them. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us. Well, tell us the story of your situation, your wife's situation. How did she inspire you to found the Invisible Disabilities Association?
Well, I met my wife back in 1992, and she was kind of a customer of mine in a store I was managing. And we ended up going out, and she shared with me that the year before she had been diagnosed with primary progressive MS. At the age of 27, she was unable to work anymore, permanently disabled, no good days, in pain from head to toe. That same year, she was also diagnosed with Lyme disease, which we can actually trace back to when she was 14 years old and had been bitten by a tick. And but I was real smitten by her, you know, just an amazing, incredible lady. Been an actress and a model and a musical theater major. She was funny and smart. 2 college degrees, and you know, I was kind of head over heels. And so we got married in '94, and in 1996, she coined the phrase "invisible disabilities." We would park in disabled parking, and people would scream at us, and they said, "You're not disabled. You're not in a wheelchair. There's nothing wrong with you." And, of course, I would devastate her. And, you know, a line she always said is that sometimes what people say hurts more than the illness.
People would actually scream at you if you were parked there.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you ought to see the blogs when we write about this subject. All the incredible people, cars get keyed. They, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. She actually had a police officer that yelled at her for parking there, even though she, you know, had the placard and the whole 9 yards, and he finally, you know, backed down. But, yeah, it's this invisible nature that people don't see. They don't see the fact that you walk into the store and you get into a scooter, right? And those little scooters, I always talk about how the scooter, the 4-year-old goes faster than the scooter, right? And that's the same 4-year-old that's looking and pointing at you and going, "Mommy, what's wrong with her?" You know, it's quite humiliating to have to do that in the first place, but you have to. You know, you got to get out. So in 96, she coined the phrase. In 97, we took some of her writings, one on disabled parking, one on multiple sclerosis. I said, "Let's launch an internet. You know, let's put this up on the web. You know, this is only a few years into the internet, so we didn't know what was going to happen." But we started getting 20,000 to 25,000 people a month from around the world, and they said, "You put into words what I wanted to tell my friends and family," and they didn't believe me.
Yeah.
And that's how it took off.
And so the... What are, besides something like MS, coupled with Lyme disease, and I'm so sorry for what your wife has to go through there, what other kinds of conditions are you talking about when you talk about invisible disabilities?
So typically what we look at is it's really the symptoms of an illness or a disability. And the reason why I use the word term disability, because it's a broader term that can cover illness, it can cover injury, it can cover pain, and a disability really means just an impairment. And it doesn't mean that a person is disabled by it. In some cases, they are. Some cases, they're not if they use an assistive device. But it's the invisible nature of an illness. So somebody could actually be in a wheelchair, and people go, "Okay, I get it. I get they're in a wheelchair, you know, and they, you know, there's some things they can't do. Maybe there are some things they can do out here in Colorado. You know, you can go skiing. Some people play rugby. All these crazy stuff with wheelchairs. But what if they're in chronic pain? that chronic pain that just gives them brain fog, and they just every day is just, how do I get out of bed? Those are the invisible symptoms that people don't understand. Now, some illnesses obviously are very specifically, you know, if you're dealing with somebody who's got bipolar or PTSD or, you know, Alzheimer's or whatever those illnesses are that are very specifically in your head, right? You can't see them. They're not very visible. But sometimes they have a visible symptom. You know, you can see somebody, maybe somebody with MS is, you know, you can tell that they're walking slower or they're, you know, because of the balance issues. So you'll notice those things, but it is those invisible symptoms that people don't believe.
Yeah. So what is it that you hope to accomplish through the organization?
So our mission really is to encourage, educate, and connect people touched by illness, pain, and disability. And the touched, obviously, means the person with the illness and the caregiver. Our vision is that they would be invisible no more, right? So people would understand that to believe people when they say, I have this issue. You know, and we hear it all the time that even the health professionals don't believe them. You know, oh, my doctor just thinks that I'm just crazy, so they just send me to a psychiatrist. When in reality is, this person's trying to get well. They weren't this way before. All of a sudden, there's a change in their life, and it wasn't just because they became lazy all of a sudden.
Yeah, so besides not giving people dirty looks, perhaps, if they park in a disabled parking spot, what is it you hope... the rest of the general public will think about or do for someone who has an invisible disability?
Well, part of it is that, you know, if you want to know what someone's going through, you need to ask them. But in order to ask them, you've got to earn the right to ask them. You can't ask the person on the street why they're walking slow through a crosswalk. You know, we may get very frustrated with them, and we think, oh, well, what's wrong with them? Why, you know, they're slowing me down. Why can't they move on? But it really is about, as a society, we need to not prejudge people, and we need to understand that if we want to know about somebody, we need to become their friend, and then it's okay to ask them because they're probably the expert on it. And then if we ask them, they ask them, how can I help you? You know, what can I do? Can I bring you lunch once a month? Can I, you know, pick up groceries when I'm going to the store already? You know, things that very practical things. And the person who has the illness or the disability, they're the ones who know how to be helped. But we have this tendency to be, you know, the we think we're the doctor. We think that we know, oh, yeah, I've heard about MS. I know all about MS, so I know what you need. But the reality, MS is a spectrum just like autism is a spectrum, and all illnesses are a spectrum. You know, so we can't tell by looking at somebody that how do we know that this is the first day they've been out in 6 months, but we may think, oh, they must be doing better. That's why they're out. No, they're out because they want to spend time with you. And they know they're going to pay for it, but you are more important than having to deal with the illness for that day. And they know they're going to pay for it, but it's that understanding that, one, we all go through difficulties, and we need each other. We need to love each other. We need to be there for each other.
Do people with invisible disabilities get the proper social support, or I should say maybe government benefits for having a disability?
Yeah, well, there's a lot more opportunity for people to get like Social Security disabilities, you know, and disabilities through their workplace. But there still is a huge misjudgment on some illnesses, you know, and of course some of it seems subjective. You know, oh, you have chronic pain. Well, you know, what's chronic pain, right? But that's why they developed a pain scale. Where it is subjective. It's like if you come into the hospitals, this, you know, what is your pain level? Well, it's an 8, but your 8 may be different than my 8. In fact, if I had my wife who was an 8 on a pain scale, I would be passed out. You know, I wouldn't be able to handle it at all. But so there is a lot of more awareness. You know, I'm a regular blogger for disability.gov and just ways that we can get out the word. Help people understand. But what always amazes me is it comes down to really how people perceive other people. You know, when the person parks in disabled parking, they have a placard, they get out of their car and they walk into the store, and for some reason we have this urge that you can't park there. Well, just like the last line in our pamphlet, Don't Judge by Appearances, it says the person you're graciously trying to defend may be standing in front of you.
We are going to check news. Actually, we're going to take a short break, and then we will continue talking about invisible disabilities with Wayne Connell. He is the founder and president of the Invisible Disabilities Association, an organization that works to raise awareness of invisible disabilities and offers resources to people who have them. And we welcome any questions or experiences that you may have with invisible disabilities. Do you have one? How does it affect your life? Maybe someone you know has one. What's your question or your experience? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So, do you have an invisible disability? Have you ever parked in a disabled parking spot and gotten disapproving looks from others or even yelled at by others because you don't look like you have a disability and you don't look like you should be able to park there? Well, our guest did have that happen. His wife has multiple sclerosis and Lyme disease, but because she wasn't in a wheelchair and her disability wasn't obvious, people assumed that she was perfectly fine or didn't have a disability. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Has that ever happened to you? We are talking with the founder of the Invisible Disabilities Association about how invisible disabilities affect so many and how we can all be more understanding of people with all disabilities, including invisible disabilities. Wayne Connell is our guest. We have many, many callers, but I wanted to, before going to the phones, Wayne, do we have any idea how many people have invisible disabilities?
Well, they can. There's some statistics on chronic illness, which impacts about one in two Americans, so about 50% of Americans, and so that means the rest of us know somebody, right? So that's and it's kind of a hard statistic because a lot of people have multiple illnesses as well. They're dealing, this is one of the things that happens is sometimes once you have one, then you might have a couple other ones that are impacting to it.
Let's go to Kendra in Milwaukee. Hi, Kendra.
Hi there. I have a friend in Texas who has something called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and among other things, it causes her joints to spontaneously dislocate.
Oh.
And she's beautiful. She has a beautiful smile. She dresses herself well. She wears makeup, and she's in a wheelchair. She gets a lot of pushback from people, like, you can't be beautiful and be in a wheelchair, you know. If you look good, then, yeah, there's nothing wrong with you. You should be able to get up and walk around. Whereas walking around for her might mean dislocating her hip or her knee and being in excruciating pain.
Oh, so because she looks good, they don't think that she should be in a chair. I was thinking, too, perhaps they think, do they think she's, it's not that dangerous for her to walk?
Yeah, and she smiles. You know, you're not allowed to smile.
Yeah, right. You know, what's interesting is we wrote a book called But You Look Good, because my wife looks incredible, but people would always say, but you look good, like looking good was some great thing to, and so that's always the difficulty that people with disabilities have is how good do you try to look too, right? Because if I show people that, you know, I've got everything together, then they might not believe me as well. So, this is the whole issue of removing that stigma of having a disability is not who you are, it's what you have. And we need to understand that everybody's valuable, no matter if you have a disability or not.
Yeah. Thank you, Kendra. Ron in Linden is with us. Hello, Ron.
Good morning. I'm just calling to comment. It's so hard to explain to people that your disability is hidden from people because they're not in you, they don't walk your shoes, you know, and just because things are hidden, you know, everybody still, you know, shies people away, you know, and don't give you a chance. And I feel reject it with that. You know, I've had my disability since 1990, and I've dealt with it off and on, you know, troubles since then, you know, and you know, some days you feel your good days, some days you have your bad days, you know, people just don't sometimes relate to you, so.
Ron, do you mind sharing with us your disability?
I received a traumatic brain injury back in 1990. I had a severe car accident, and they had to revive me on the way to the hospital. I was in a coma and stuff like that. I had to learn to walk, talk, read, do all that kind of stuff all over again, you know, at the age of 19. And I'm back. I mean, now I'm 40 some years old, you know, and it's just so weird that, you know, it's just so hard to accept other people when you get a comment here or there, you know, because my injury really is kind of hidden, you know, people can't see that I have on my disability, but except myself, I feel they can, but you really can't see it from my standpoint, you know, they can't, it's just hard. Once they know it's a better
Ron, and I'm so sorry for what happened. When you say people say things, what sort of they don't? What do they say? Well, how do they not get it?
They sometimes when you know I have memory issues and stuff like that. Yeah. When I got to do things over and over and over again, and I still don't catch on. And there's days that I do catch on. There's days that I don't. And you know, it's just something like that. You know,
yeah,
it's just,
I get it.
It's hard. You know, people like they say they get it, but then a lot of times they don't get it. You know, and then
you feel like
about it when they're not with you. You know, you know, so it's a self confidence kind of thing that you have to kind of deal with and try to develop, which is so hard to do and keep. So,
you know, one of the interesting things about that is that sometimes people try to do the old I can relate, which we talk about in our book, is, you know, well, people go, oh, yeah, well, you know, I forget things too, right? Well, and that's a totally different thing. And so they think they're trying to relate, but then sometimes when you're dealing with actual memory issues, you know, it doesn't make you feel really good because then it feels like they're disregarding that it's like, oh, yeah, well, if I could only remember better. But the reality is it's your brain injury that's causing these issues. You know, Joy, this is one of the reasons why we also have an online social network that we connect people, you know, invisibledisabilitiescommunity.org. It's that so that people can connect who are dealing with this illness and share these stories too with each other and feel like they're not alone in this world.
Did you say that was disabilitiescommunity.org?
Yeah, no, invisibledisabilitiescommunity.org, or you can get to it through our website.
Okay, and we will put that site and your website on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, if you have a question for our guest, Wayne Connell, founder and president of the Invisible Disabilities Association, you can call 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Or perhaps you have an experience that you would like to share. Perhaps you would like to raise our awareness of people who have invisible disabilities, maybe your invisible disability. Tell us how it's affected your life. Tell us what you would want people to know about your invisible disability. So many more callers. So let's go to Karen in Madison. Hello, Karen.
Hey, Joy. I speak to you often about disability issues. I have a physical disability, very obvious, but my neighbor is a really hot-looking redhead, and she just has a personality that's really huge. But she deals with fibromyalgia and other disabilities that are just so invisible. And what she doesn't live in the building anymore, but when she was living here, I noticed that she didn't get up early often. And some days she could and some days she couldn't. So I would deliver groceries to her as I could. And, I mean, some days because I knew that she just never ate anything because she just couldn't get her body to the grocery store. And when she moved out of the building and had this great grand opening of her new place, she introduced me to her entire family and everybody as her savior because I consciously acknowledged her hidden disability enough to go shopping for her and giving her food And, I mean, there's just so many obvious little bitty indications when people are dealing with an internal pain that's so significant. And you can kind of see the wincing on somebody's face if you just take a second to notice who's right in front of you.
Karen, thank you for sharing that. Isn't that something that someone with a physical disability recognized that someone with an invisible disability needed some help and provided it, Wayne?
Yeah, and that's what's interesting, too, is something she pointed out. You know, if you're already going to the store, why not ask your neighbor, can I pick something up? It's those real simple things of, you know, I'm going to bring you lunch once a month. That has a huge impact on them. They only have so much energy they can do each day, and some very simple things we can do. It doesn't have to be the big, complex, difficult things. It's the simple things of just a kind word. It's sending a note. It's making a quick phone call. It's, can I pick you something up at the store? You know, those things are fantastic, and I really appreciate the fact that people are trying to make a difference.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what's it like to work with an invisible disability?
Well, this is one of the difficult things is how much do you show your employer how disabled you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously there are laws, the American Disabilities Act, where you actually have to let your employee know if for some reason you need some type of accommodation. You know, she mentioned how her neighbor was hard to get up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people that work, maybe a 7 a.m. shift is not going to work for them, and they need a special accommodation for that, so they need to make sure that their employer knows that. But it is this tough thing of how disabled do I look when in reality is, you know, I don't look disabled. There's nothing wrong with me. You know, I know of people that use canes. I mean, my wife will take a cane sometimes when she goes to the doctor, just so, you know, sometimes it helps with her balance, but most of the time it's just so she has a cane. So maybe somebody will believe her more with a cane, but you would be surprised how many people don't even believe somebody when they have a cane.
Yeah. And there are the laws. Are there laws protecting people who have invisible disabilities from employment discrimination?
Yeah, it's the same laws. It's the same laws. It doesn't matter if it's you can see it physically or it's invisible. The thing that's difficulty is you look at things, for example, like accessible parking, where we'll see that where you've got a disabled spot with a curb cutout. A lot of times, though, those spaces are really far away from the front door just because of the convenience of the curb and everything. And so somebody with an invisible disability, maybe walking a distance, is very hard for them. And so we don't always think about those aspects, how those people are impacted differently than somebody maybe in a wheelchair who can roll a little bit longer distance. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a huge education that's going to need to continue on this.
Yeah, and you mentioned your wife would sometimes take a cane with her to the doctor's office. How does the healthcare system treat people with invisible disabilities?
Well, they can be just as disregarding as the rest of us. It's very interesting. We tell people, when you go to the doctor, don't get all dressed up sometimes. Go like you normally are, because sometimes they'll get so dressed up and so put together, that when the person comes to evaluate them, they think, well, there's nothing wrong with them, versus, let people see how you really are. And sometimes you have to do that with your doctor as well. This is the pain I'm in all the time. I'm not going to try to be, a hero to get through it today. I'm going to show you this is what I'm dealing with every day. And so, yeah, the professionals are not immune from their prejudging either.
Chris on Facebook says, I have lived with chronic migraines since the 1980s. I was able to retire about 2 years ago and was recently granted eligibility for Social Security disability in August. The migraines started to interfere with my work in 2008. I was able to take early retirement in 2013 when the employer had started the process to terminate my employment. Oh, I see. So he was kind of forced to retire to some extent.
Right.
Well, that's sad. And you don't think of the chronic migraines. They really can be debilitating, can they?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But some people think, well, I get headaches too, right? It's that old comparison thing. It's like, it's a little bit different.
Right, yeah. Where you sometimes have to be in a dark room with the, sleeping or trying to sleep for days in order to get rid of the pain.
Right.
Sarah in Sparta. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm good. Do you have an example of an invisible disability?
Oh, yeah. I appreciate your guest, how much you do. I have not been really active here with your website, but I have seen some of your materials, and I appreciate very much what you're doing.
Oh, you're welcome.
I have dealt in one way or another with invisible disability my whole life, but most of the life, my life, it hasn't really been acknowledged. And I'm kind of an example. You had asked about the finances and what is available for people with invisible disabilities. I'm an example of what can go wrong. I actually, growing up, I had I take tests well, so everyone thought I was really bright, but not doing as well in school as I ought to. And it wasn't until I was a senior in high school that they diagnosed me with attention deficit disorder and another little learning disability running around alongside it. I knew I got tired all the time. I knew I was sore all the time. But we had a name. We had the ADD. And I went to college. I had some support through an organization called the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation in Wisconsin, which is a really good program for people who have disabilities, verified disabilities, to try to help them get some income-earning activity. I went to college. During that time, my marriage fell apart, and I was raising a small son and went through an incredible amount of stress. Still managed to graduate from college, but the summer after that, my son brought home a respiratory illness. And then I caught it, and then my world ended.
Why?
And I have been diagnosed now with fibromyalgia, which I think I probably had my whole life, and chronic fatigue syndrome, which a lot of times can come after an infectious trigger.
I see.
I went through the first 12 years, for the first 6 or 7 years without a diagnosis, except you're crazy, go to a counselor. After that, there was very little actual help and support. I've been fighting with Social Security since the early 2000s. The current case I'm dealing with has been going since 2007. I was grateful to have food stamps. I was grateful to have housing authority. My son and I would not have lived without that assistance. I had no other cash assistance. We had medical coverage. The only assistance we had was $400 child support a month. And that's what I raised my son on.
I'm sorry, Sarah. So when you say that you're an example of everything going wrong, you're still fighting for disability payments?
The Social Security system is broken. And I remember the last couple of years, the Housing Authority funding has gone away. This is what keeps poor people in their homes. I talked to one of the employees or one of the agents at the current local agency, and he was describing the cuts that had gone on, and he said he talked to the people that who were bringing the cuts and saying so many of his clients were people with disabilities who did not get Social Security, and it didn't matter. The guidelines have changed.
Yeah. Sarah, and I do apologize just because we have so many callers that I don't think we can go much further on this, except to get Wayne Connell to respond generally. Is this is Sarah's situation all that unusual, or what's your
actually
reaction?
No, it's not. We get lots of people that come to our website that are always talking about these difficulties. What people don't understand is that Social Security disability, it takes on average 5 years and 3 tries to get it. And you have to think about that during that whole, there's a 6-year time frame in that you're unable to work if you could do anything. And so, you know, you hear this all the time. People go, oh, they're just trying to, you know, get by on the system. They're faking their illness so they can get Social Security disability. Well, the reality is it takes so long, and in the end, you don't get a whole lot either. So it is a huge problem that's out there. There's great organizations like ALSUP out of Southern Illinois, and that their whole focus is to help people get Social Security disability. But, you know, they talk about how difficult it is for that to happen. So, yeah, and when you have an invisible disability, you know, you got to prove way more than anybody else would be required.
Gosh, I mean, that's just so sad. And Wayne, we have just 2 minutes before we have to take another hard break. I mean, this having an invisible disability and having difficulty getting any sort of disability payments if you can't work because of your disabilities, I mean, this can have, it truly does have profound effects on people.
Yeah, so many people are trapped in their homes who, you know, they're devastated. And so what I call, they've become invisible too. And it's a society when you say, no longer. We need to reach out to these people and say, you know, how can we, you know, help you be part of, give you some hope. And so much of their hope has been removed. And so, you know, that's why as an organization we exist. Every day we hear somebody talk about these issues and we say, I'm like, this is why we're here, is to bring awareness to this, to educate people and to connect them.
Do you have resources on your website for people like Sarah or others?
We have some links on our site. You know, obviously a good resource is at disability.gov. Companies like Allsup, I think they're Allsup.com. Those kind of companies are great resources as well. You know, we try to do what we can, and it breaks my heart sometimes because there's a lot of times nothing we can do about it. They need to go to their state resources and try to, you know, get help that way.
We're talking with Wayne Connell, founder and president of the Invisible Disabilities Association, an organization that works to raise awareness of invisible disabilities and help people who have them. Do you have an invisible disability? Tell us how it has affected your life. And what sort of awareness would you like to share? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. When we come back from this break, we'll talk more about how workplaces deal with people who have invisible disabilities. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with the founder and president of the Invisible Disabilities Association, Wayne Connell, and welcoming your questions and your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Mitchell in Madison is with us. Hello.
Hello. Hi. My question is, I actually have Asperger's, and I've been lucky where I was put through, you know, training and whatnot, so I'm doing a little bit better. But what I noticed is that when I had some of the more beginning in entry-level jobs or call centers, that it was very hard for them to even if I did disclose in the interview, they'd be like, oh, yeah, sure, we'll take you. But then no accommodations are made. And looking back, you know, I wonder if maybe they even knew how to accommodate it, because, you know, like a wheelchair, you put in a ramp or you can do something like that. But, you know, I guess how would an employer, you know, be able to account for that? Or how would someone like myself be able to get them more education without hurting myself?
Yeah, that's always a difficult thing, right? You know, it's how much do you disclose about what you know? But the reality is you are the educator in that sense, and you need to work with, you know, maybe the, you know, like the Autism Society or the, you know, there's quite a few great organizations that are out there. But it is that education that they need to understand what accommodation do you need? You know, what you know, is a that's the biggest key, is you're right. It's not a wheelchair ramp or it's not a keyboard that's with Braille on it. You know, what is that accommodation that you're looking for that they can accommodate? Is it, you know, I need to work a different shift, you know, or I may have to, you know, work a different day once a week or something along those lines. But, this is a big education piece that's going to take a long time to work through, is to get employers to understand that, yes, the disabilities are invisible, and if they don't understand what it is, they need to be asking.
Yeah, Mitchell, what would you like your employer to do to accommodate your Asperger's?
Well, in the case of the call center, I had no accommodations for limits on time, you know, you had to try to work and be personable, which for someone with autism and Asperger's, that's hard enough, just understanding the social component and then trying to be on a certain time.
Oh, I see, because a lot of times call centers will say things like, you need to finish that call up in 2 minutes, and it might take you longer than 2 minutes to finish that call up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, something that's interesting about accommodations, though, is that for accommodations to take place, the person still has to be able to do the job that they are required to do. So this is where the difficulty comes into place. Sometimes with a disability, there are certain jobs you can't do, right, based upon your disability, and there's no accommodations they can really make to do it. So a big key for you is finding what jobs can you do. You know, for example, out here in Colorado, in Colorado Springs, there's a company called Blue Star Recyclers, and they employ a lot of people with autism, and what they do is they're a technical recycler. So they do all this cool stuff of recycling technology, and the people that are working with them, they love doing that, right? These kids with I guess adults, not just kids, but with some of the autism. So it's finding the right job as well is a big part of it, and how, you know, this is one of the new pushes now, is to trying to find jobs where people excel at in certain areas of their life. And maybe, like you said, you have a difficulty sometimes in the social thing. You know, there may be certain jobs that wouldn't make sense, right, for you to do because it might be too overwhelming. But there are other jobs that are like, yeah, this is where I would be great at. You know, put me in a cubicle or do something that I love doing, you know, whatever that is, you know. And so finding that is the difficulty, but also the accommodation can be a difficult nature for the business because sometimes they have certain, you know, policies. So how do you change those policies? Well, it depends. Are they changeable, right? Can they be reasonably accommodated? And maybe they're like, yeah, what we'll do is we'll work you, you know, two-hour shifts and give you more of a break time versus somebody else who has to work a straight four-hour shift. You know, that might be a reasonable accommodation.
Thank you, and good luck, Mitchell. You know, we have another caller, so let me just ask his question as a follow-up, but wondering how people with disabilities should work with the businesses that are not complying with the ADA.
Well, you got to contact the ADA. You know, and it may impact your job, right? But the reality is that in order for us to all be educated, we actually have to follow through with the people that we need to follow through with.
Yeah. So let's go next to Diane in Madison. Hello, Diane.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling in regards to, I was born with fetal alcohol syndrome. I was labeled retarded or retread back in those days. And I had disabilities going through school, all the way through school. I was born with one kidney, blind in one eye, hematomas on the liver, and my lung collapsed. I was pretty small most of my life. As I was getting older, I went and got a job at Central Wisconsin Center. After that, some people there, a psychologist, told me that I should go to college, that I'm intelligent. Well, I couldn't go, and so I said, I can't read very well. And so he told me to go to MATC, so I went under Barbara Bliss, and she just put her wings around me and helped me out getting through MATC. Then I went to MATC by the airport, and they were just absolutely phenomenal. If MATC, we lose MATC, it's going to be awful. Then from there, I got DVR's help. I had to prove to them that I could study. So I had to do that for 2 years before I could get really any help from them. And finally, Diane Schultz helped me out and throughout that. In fact, I still know her today. She's helped me go through college, and it was difficult, but I got through it, and I had tutors.
Diane,
I was very, very fortunate.
So, and again, I'm so sorry to interrupt. I just we have limited time. So your point is that congratulations, you overcame some very big disabilities, and you got a college education. I mean, should we be hopeful based on what happened to you?
Well, when I went to work, where I worked, I was let off. I was told to go to doctors and find out if I can stay. And so because of my the way I study and the way I work with people, it's a certain way. Well, I ended up losing my job. I couldn't go back to work. And it was very difficult to do have that happen to me at my age, right close to being able to retire. Well, it was 2009. But that's I think that's very that was awful. And even today, I have a difficult time with it.
Yeah. Any words of wisdom or support, Wayne?
Well, it's a sad thing what we have to go through, the people have to go through in the workplace, and this is where we want to help people be invisible no more and help them be understanding. I want you to know that your journey is you're not alone in your journey on this, and that there are other people that can understand what you're going through, and that's part of the battle too. Is you feel so alone when things like this happen, and that's why as an organization we want to connect those people to say, hey, you're not alone. What you're going through is difficult, and we're here to be an encouraging word for you.
Good luck, Diane. Thank you very much for sharing. You know, you also say that we've talked about some issues of people with invisible disabilities in the workplace and in the healthcare system, in the parking lot. You also say that people with invisible disabilities can even lose friends and family and be accused of lying or faking. Well, why do you think people are so unwilling to believe that people have invisible disabilities?
You know, this is the difficult thing, right? Somebody just doesn't all of a sudden start to be lazy. Something happened to them. I still haven't cracked that nut to figure out why we would want to judge other people. You know, we look for a cause. If we can find a cause, we can blame them. I don't know, there's something about that that we think that suffering is something that the person is a bad person for some reason. But the reality is that, you know, a lot of people go through invisible disabilities, and it's friends and family. We need to believe them, and that's what, you know, what we're about is believing them when they say, I can do this or I can't do this. But we see this notion where they come to a party, you know, like a family reunion, and then you want them to invite them to over for dinner later, and they're like, well, I can't do that. Well, you just came to the family reunion. How come you can't do that? You know, we question people. We need to stop questioning them. We start believing them, and they say, because I wanted to be there, and I'm going to pay for it, you know, and it's going to be difficult. But so many people, so many marriages have been destroyed. So many family members have lost. You know, our book, But You Look Good, has been on husbands' pillows for a month until they read it. And then they're on their knees asking their wife for forgiveness. We've seen it happen thousands of times. And it doesn't make sense. Why would we treat people that way? You know, we just need to stop treating people that way. We need to start believing them.
Let's go to Dave in Dave in Menominee. I'm sorry, we had a little phone issue there. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Well, I've been wanting to call all hour, but I was just basically too ashamed. But when the guest brought up a family, I had to call. I have an invisible disability. You know, since I've been hit by a drunk driver a little over 10 years ago. 3.5 years of physical therapy on a bike and many other things have made me be able to walk and be able to still ride a bike. But believe me, if people that see you on a bike, you better not let them know that you do collect any kind of disability, because I have had people make all kinds of comments. The day that I qualified for Social Security, my parents and I celebrated. Two siblings of mine got in touch with me and told me how ashamed they were of me. Told me how they felt sorry for my kids and that I suck off the teat of the government. And coincidentally, any of these people, even neighbors who have friends of my kids, have sent over their kids to specifically ask, where do I work? You know, so it's very shameful.
Yep, that's part of the difficulty, right, is this whole issue of the stigma, and it's like, where do you work? You know, you would work if you could. I mean, I just know that. I hear that in your voice. It's like you would love to work, but the reality is that you're unable to do that, and people don't understand that, and I just, it breaks my heart to hear when people say,
well, you're just faking this thing because you want to, you know, get something back. The reality is you'd rather not. You don't want to do this, but you need to in this sense. And so, yeah, you're right. Friends and family, you know, all the time, we hear it all the time, how they've just abandoned their friends.
Dave, I'm so glad that you called in, and I'm so sorry. Thank you for having the courage to do that. And I guess I never thought of that. Here he needed a lot of rehabilitation to be able to do so, but he can ride a bike. And just because of that, people don't think he could have any sort of disability.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Let's see if I can fit. Gary in Deerfield is with us. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Yes, hi. I wanted to just talk briefly about people with multiple chemical sensitivities, and not only that, but many of those people end up with electrical, it's called electro sensitivity, sensitive
right.
to the things coming from wireless, cell phones, computers. And my wife experienced this, and my God, talk about scary, stressful, isolating.
My wife actually has a multiple chemical sensitivity as well. In fact, we have one of our websites, part of our organization, is called Cleaner Indoor Air, and it is about the chemicals that are out there that are impacting people, and they're trying to deal with their illness as well. So it's a huge issue that affects 12.5% to 15% of the population. But it's another one of those things where people are like, oh, right, my perfume bothers you. You know, we just, you know, we got to start believing people instead of just ignoring them and telling them that they're fakers or liars.
Yeah, so how can society change to treat people with invisible disabilities better?
It's going to be one person at a time believing their friend, and that's what it's going to take. For everybody to understand that we all go through difficult times in life, and sometimes people's difficulty is a continual chronic thing. But we need to understand that, the norm is not, oh, that we're all healthy. The norm is that we're all going through a difficult thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a lot more harder than others, and we need to believe those people and start to just to understand and be their friend.
We still have 1 minute left. Since you started your association, are you seeing fewer dirty looks when you park in disabled parking?
Maybe because she's a little bit older, but not normally. You know, she still has to. You know, what's interesting too, because I get out of the car, right? So when I drive and we park in disabled parking and I get out and go around to the door and get her out and walk in, you know, and I always feel like, I need to pull her along faster or something, because people do. They look at you. They, you know, yeah, the looks have not changed. And disabled parking is such a huge, huge issue. People don't want to park there who should be parking there because of the looks.
Yeah, so if they have the placard, lay off.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you very much for being with us. Wayne Connell, founder and president of the Invisible Disabilities Association. Thanks to Christy Taylor, to Caleb Lato, and to Cynthia Schuster for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. There's much more to come. I hope you stay tuned. Also, tomorrow at this time, it's On Your Money. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will be in to offer information and advice on your money. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.